Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Today we're coming to you from the state capitol in Pierre. We're in the Speaker's Lounge just outside the House chambers where in about 35 minutes or so, Governor Dennis Stuttgart kicks off the 2015 session with his State of the State address. He's expected to discuss transportation funding, workforce development initiatives, as well as an overhaul of the state's juvenile justice system. We'll bring you the governor's address live here on SDPB Radio, but right now we'll take a little break from legislative issues and talk with historical fiction writer Steve Lindstrom. Although he now lives in Marshall, Minnesota, he grew up in western South Dakota. He used to work here in the state capitol. He was fiscal analyst for the Legislative Research Council, director of research for the State Board of Regents, and the state director of information services. His first novel, The Last Ram, is set in 1903 in the Badlands. His latest book is called The Murder Trial of the Last Lakota Warrior. It's the story of a young Lakota named Plenty Horses who stands trial for shooting an Army lieutenant in the aftermath of Wounded Knee. Steve Lindstrom is a part of the South Dakota Humanities Council's speakers roster. He's giving a presentation this evening at the History and Heritage Book Club at the Cultural Heritage Center in Pierre. He's with us, and Steve, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl. It's been really interesting to get back up in the Capitol after all these years.
Yeah, what's it like to come back and be in this place where you worked for so many years?
Well, I had somebody upstairs mention that maybe all those years of drafting legislation really prepared me for a career in fiction writing. I don't know.
Because you worked at the Research Council, so that involved helping legislators put together legislation.
Exactly.
So how then did that help you, you think, with writing, or maybe that was just a facetious comment from...
Well, actually, it's a little of both. One of the things that that the LRC's always challenge is how to take complex issues and to winnow them down so it's easily understandable to get to write the basis of them. And frankly, that is one of the issues with fiction writing, too, is, you know, you want to keep pontificating. And in the end, you need to figure out what your basic theme is and write to that. You know, it's the old Hemingway, you know, you got to cut down to the chase. And that's one of the things that drafting legislation you're required to do. If you write to pontificate too much, they take it all out of the bill anyway.
In going back to your time when you were living and working here at the state capitol, were you doing any fiction writing at that time?
No, I really wasn't. I've always been a voracious reader. But I had never taken a creative writing class, mostly because of fear, I think. And I left here and then went to work for Schwann Food Company in Marshall, where I was a vice president. And as that career was kind of coming to an end, I decided that I did want to try to do fiction writing. So I was really 50 years old before I got into it. I went back, got a master's degree in literature from Minnesota State University Mankato, and now I'm pumping them out.
Yeah. How did you did you know that you wanted to work in historical fiction?
No, I like most writers, I have several unpublished manuscripts sitting in a top drawer somewhere that, I enjoy historical fiction. I think that I've always enjoyed the Badlands, and that really drove me to write my first novel, The Last Ram. It's such an interesting place, and it's kind of an uncharted gem in South Dakota. I mean, especially I see from Minnesota people, when they head to South Dakota, head west, they're only an hour away from the Black Hills, and they want to get there, so they don't want to stop in the Badlands, and they're really missing one of the most beautiful areas in the country.
Now, your book, The Last Ram, as you mentioned, this takes place in the Badlands, 1903. There's a young man named Evan, and he sees an Audubon sheep that was thought to be extinct, and he has a best friend, David, who just come back from Indian school. He was an adopted Lakota boy. And is this something of a coming-of-age story set in 1903?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that the actual facts that happened is there was a bighorn sheep in the Badlands in the 1800s that was hunted out of existence by 1880, and it was thought to be extinct. Then when they spotted one just after the turn of the century, there was a hunt to see who could make a trophy of the last of the species. And it was such a transitional time in our society. For years, they've been trying to overcome nature. You know, we're going to beat back nature so we can civilize it. Now, all of a sudden, maybe we should be retaining nature. Maybe we shouldn't be killing off the last of the species. So it was a really transitional time. I thought that transitional time between childhood and adulthood was really lines up with that. It was a good metaphor for that, you know, and everybody goes through that. Some of us never make it all the way through childhood to adulthood part. I'm way more child than I'd like to admit sometimes. But I thought it worked well together of pairing the Old West to the New World and from childhood to adulthood.
And also dealing with a difficult part of South Dakota history, and that's Lakota, and trying, in you know, in this case, sending a boy to Indian school, and what that means when he comes back to the Badlands.
Exactly. Every 13-year-old boy goes through an identity crisis. I mean, you're not sure if you're a kid or an adult, if you want to play in, with trucks in the backyard or hustle chicks on the corner. But poor David, the Native Americans, they're not sure if they're white or if they're Lakota. You know, the people who set up those schools thought they were doing the right thing. But it was really a terrible thing that they ended up doing. There's an interesting book by Ward Churchill called Kill the Indian to Save the Man. And that was generally the prescribed idea that they were trying to do in those. And it hit different Indian boys differently. I mean, there are some, Charles Eastman, for instance, who thrived and became a doctor. There are others who, and actually Plenty Horses, who was a character in my second novel, it was an utter failure for them, and they found out that, you know, they weren't really accepted into white society because they weren't really good at school and such, but then they came back to the Lakota and found they were tainted.
How difficult is it for you to write about that experience, the Lakota experience, in your books?
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, clearly, it's an emotional issue for everyone. Having, you know, grown up in South Dakota with Lakota people, I think I don't like it when they get portrayed to a stereotype into certain roles, and so I tend to write them as regular people because I believe that they are. And but there are people who went through some very difficult experiences, and so I write mostly about how the white people were reacting to them, because clearly I'm not Lakota, and I can't really speak from their perspective.
Your second book, which you mentioned, your most recent one, which I think came out last summer, The Murder Trial of the Last Lakota Warrior. This takes place in 1891, where Plenty Horses, the Lakota warrior, standing trial. This comes in the aftermath of the Wounded Knee Massacre, and he shot an army lieutenant. And this also gets into the history of South Dakota's the Sioux Falls as the nation's divorce capital of the world. So there's a wealthy socialite who's seeking a divorce. There's also a former member of the 7th Cavalry in this book. And they all come together and sort of become this unlikely team to help the Plenty Horses.
Yeah, it was an extremely interesting trial. We talk about historical fiction. My first book was more probably fiction than history. I mean, there were some basics, but in this second book, it's very closely aligned to history. The Plenty Horses trial was one of the more interesting ones in South Dakota history. It was the first time a Native American had been tried for a capital crime. And I thought it really interesting that it occurred when Sioux Falls was the divorce capital. So I looked at a way to tell the story of the courtroom drama, which obviously I needed to follow very closely, the actual transcripts and such. I wanted to look at it through a different set of eyes. So, at the time, people from the East Coast were just starting to really get used to what was going on in the West, and they had a real different view of both the white settlers and what the Lakota were like. And so I wanted to try to portray that through looking at it through the eyes of a divorcee.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're talking with author Steve Lindstrom. He's giving a presentation this evening at the South Dakota Humanity Council's program at the History and Heritage Book Club at the Cultural Heritage Center in Pier. Then, also you're stopping by Prairie Pages here in Pier as well?
That's right. I'm signing down there from 4 till 6.
Okay, so it's sort of a homecoming for you. As we mentioned, you used to work here
in
Pier. Now, in writing historical fiction, particularly when you're dealing with real characters, what are your responsibilities in being in real characters, being honest to who they were and being true to the times, and trying to get everything as accurate as you can.
Yeah, that is an issue. I mean, clearly you have to do the research to try to be as accurate to the times as possible. Unfortunately, historical fact, a lot of time, you see that on the surface, but there's a lot of things that happen in the back room that you don't, history doesn't really record, but that's a lot of the interesting thing to say. I think a good example is what's going on, the controversy around the movie Selma right now and the way that they portrayed LBJ, you know? And so as a historical fiction writer, you're kind of in the back rooms, because that's where it's interesting. You're talking about stuff and you're trying to think about what they're saying, and you want them to fit your plot line, you know, and your plot points, because it is fiction. You're telling a story. You're both trying to entertain and enlighten readers.
What would seem to me to be the most fun part of writing historical fiction is creating your own characters and then putting them in these real places, these real times.
That really is, and it was fun, particularly for my second book, to be able to tie it as a prequel to my first book, and because they both occur, you know, the Wounded Knee massacre was a significant part of both, and so in having characters go back and forth, and frankly, any time that you have readers who are can relate to a character that you've created, it's a huge compliment for a writer, and that's the reason you do it.
Do you see that in the future, as you continue to write, that historical fiction will be the genre? Are you open to trying other things?
Actually, I have a nonfiction book that I'm working on right now, and I'm not going to go through my same publisher, so I'm kind of looking for a home where I've done I've used my background of management and leadership and combine that with my love of Lakota history. So I've done kind of a leadership management analysis of the top Lakota leaders from the late 1800s, Spotted Tail, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, and Sitting Bull. And it's just fascinating the challenges they faced as leaders and how they attacked them differently. The whole idea of pragmatism versus idealism that we face today, they were facing with very real consequences. So it's an exciting book. I'm hoping that I can live up to the idea with my writing ability.
Do you see writing as being something of a second career, a post 50-year-old career?
Yeah, I kind of look at it as a third career. You know,
I
did my gig in state government. Uh-huh. You know, I was here for 17 years and did a lot of things, and then went into the corporate world, and I was there for 14 years. And so it's kind of like, yeah, let's do something else. I mean, life's too short to get boring.
Was it difficult to, I mean, how long did it take for you to, I guess, find your voice and to feel like, okay, I can write, and this is something that's good, and I'm able to communicate with readers?
In some ways, I'm still getting there. I don't think any writer ever, I think it's always an evolving thing. And part of it is, frankly, it's learning to take criticism. There are a lot of fabulous writers out there that I don't personally care for. So it's okay if somebody doesn't like my book. I don't like it very much, but it's okay. And so I'm kind of trying to get, you know, used to that and finding my voice. It's worth it when you find somebody who is really inspired by what you've written and something they really like your book. It makes it all worthwhile.
Did it take you some time to be able to accept or find criticism was worthwhile and that it was helpful, or?
Yeah, I mean, there's a natural feeling that, you know, what I did's good and it can't be changed. I actually, my first draft of Last Ram, I had a character in there that I had placed in the Amazon Breakthrough Novel Contest, but one of the reviewers said, "You're trying to do too much." And so after swearing a whole lot, I realized he was right, and I went through and cut a major character and story arc out of the book, and then had to rewrite around it, cut a third of the book out and rewrite it. It was a pain, but it improved the book. And so that was but you also have to be careful about, you know, don't ask a question if you don't want to hear the answer. You know, don't just ask anybody to say, well, what do you think of my book, and think you're going to change it.
Yeah, I think that even in this business, you find that editors are oftentimes, or usually are, our best friends in getting.
And it's tough. You know, you put your heart and soul into a book, and boy, you hate to have to change.
Because it's your baby. It's so personal.
Those characters are you care about a lot for them.
And finally, you're writing for readers, and so in a situation like this, when you come to Pier and you're at the Prairie Pages and you're at the Cultural Heritage Center, how important is it for you to meet your readers face to face?
I think it's very important. I find that as a reader, I have a different experience with the book if I have an opportunity to meet the writer. You know, you form a relationship anyway when you read a writer's writing. But if you can meet them, it's just a different experience, and it's something that I really encourage people to take the chance to get to meet regional writers. You know, you're not going to be able to meet James Patterson or Stephen King, but you can meet people who are writing around this part of the country, and there's a lot of really good writing out there. The publishing industry is changing dramatically, and so I encourage people to get a chance to meet a writer.
Steve Lindstrom is the author of two historical novels set in South Dakota, The Last Ram and The Murder Trial of the Last Lakota Warrior, and you'll have a chance to meet him if you're here in Pier. He's the guest speaker this evening at the History and Heritage Book Club at the Cultural Heritage Center in Pier. That event begins at 7. It's open to the public. It's made possible by the South Dakota Humanities Council. And again, you're also at Prairie Pages, and that begins at?
At 4 to 6.
4 to 6. Well, Steve, thanks so much for stopping by, and hope you enjoy the rest of your time here in Pier.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.